The Dodgers and Diamondbacks wrap up a thrilling four-game series today, but one that's prompted postseason questions about the viability of both teams. We'll talk about that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, September 2nd. I am Lindsey Crosby. He's Christian Rau. And Christian, amazing game, amazing weekend of games, right? Lots of interesting stuff. I want to start with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, okay? Wraparound series, four-game series. It wraps up today. But the first three games, LA won 10-9, LA won 8-6, Arizona wins on Sunday 14-3. So, finale, obviously, today, very exciting, but I think that this series has kind of exposed some concerns for both teams as we get closer to October, because I think we're both in agreement, in some sort of order, these are both postseason teams. Like, they're both going to make the postseason.
Right.
But let's start with LA. This series really featured questionable pitching, right? Clayton Kershaw gets hurt in the series opener, goes to the IL with a bone spur in his toe. I believe you guys touched on that a little bit on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Gavin Stone gets whacked on Saturday. Justin Wroblewski gets double whacked yesterday. With all of the other injuries they have, Glasnow, Yamamoto, Walker Buehler not looking the same after Tommy John, do the Dodgers have the pitching that they need to make a deep postseason run?
I never thought we were going to be in this position to even ask this question, Lindsey, because if you remember at the beginning of the year, I mean, every major media market, MLB Network, ESPN, you name it, were having a hard time fitting the amount of pitchers on a graphic for the amount of starting pitchers the Dodgers had. Now we're at a point to where we don't know if they're going to have three solid starters heading into the playoffs. And I do think this is a big concern. You look at Wroblewski, as you mentioned, he let up 10 hits, 10 earned runs, only two strikeouts, and only two of those were home runs. He just had a really, really bad day yesterday. And Grove, his reliever that came in, also didn't really do well. I mean, they went to Kike Hernandez. They had a position player later on. Position player pitching is always fun, but not when you're the Dodgers trying to, you know, extend your lead in the NL West. I will say, I think I am concerned about this. And I think it all stemmed down to what happened on Friday with Clayton Kershaw. You only giving him two innings and then making the bullpen have to work before a huge series like that. It's, you're already running into issues with this pitching rotation. Then you have to make your bullpen work. You put yourself in a tough position. They're going to need a reset. And you're not getting that today because you're finishing off this series with the Diamondbacks. Jack Flaherty's on the mound for the Dodgers. He must have a great start. Like, we're talking, he has to go at least seven innings for them to be able to, like, all right, let's regroup and move forward. Like, that's how much I need to instill my confidence back in the Dodgers rotation.
Right. I want to real quick go through the injuries that they've had this year just from the rotation. So Clayton Kershaw missed 119 days, came back on it again. Walker Buehler missed 39 to start the season, coming back from Tommy John, missed 56 during the year and is now back, but not doing very well. Tony Gonsolin's missed the entire season after Tommy John. Dustin May missed the entire season after Tommy John. Emmett Sheehan has been on the IL with forearm inflammation the entire year. Bobby Miller missed 69 days earlier this year. Kyle Hurt missed 65 days earlier this year. Yamamoto is now at 78 days for his rotator cuff strain, and Glasnow is on his second IL stint. He's been out 18 days in both of them. First one, lower back tightness. This one, elbow tendonitis. Oh, River Ryan, 22 days for forearm tightness as well. He's out right now as well. And so, yeah, it's you don't want to say a guy has to go seven innings, but that's what LA needs, right? Like, they need Flaherty to give them depth simply because this bullpen is, like you said, incredibly taxed. They had to pick up seven innings in the first game of the series. And I do think that this is a little bit of a problem of LA's own making. It feels like the Dodgers' strategy here, both in trades, in free agency, in drafting, has been we're going to go after incredibly talented pitchers that other teams are undervaluing because of the injury concerns. So I think that there was some of this baked in. They knew they were going to have some injuries like this. Did they think that they were going to have, I'm counting real quick, they think they were going to have 17 pitchers go in the IL this year? Probably not that many, but it does feel like this was some of the strategy. We have a bunch of young prospects who are talented, but have injury histories or questionable health situations. We've got a lot of talented veterans in the same situation. We are confident we can piece together a playoff rotation when the time comes. Obviously, they had to supplement and get Jack Flaherty. Just like a few years ago, they had to supplement and get Max Scherzer, you know, at the deadline. So it does feel like this is a little bit baked in. But at the same time, you saw a blueprint this weekend where it may not matter as long as you can just get competence from the mound. Because the top three of your order, I'll remind everybody, are all former MVPs. And when they're hot, they can do stuff like this.
Powering fly ball to center for Jake. To the track. To the wall. And it's gone. Does on Shohei's bat. And Mookie Betts sends one out of here. Freddie Freeman, unbelievable. Three swings, three Dodger homers to start the game.
Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, back to back to back to open the game. And in each of those at-bats, I believe it was the first swing the guy took. That was all off of Merrill Kelly, by the way, which not a great situation for the Diamondbacks to be in if it's off of Merrill Kelly. We'll get the Diamondbacks in a second. If you have those three hitting on all cylinders, and then you get some competence behind them, right? Max Muncy's able to be okay. Will Smith kind of gets back to the form that he showed early in the year. Does it really matter as long as the pitching staff can just keep you in a game? Does it matter if they can give you six shutout or not?
Well, I mean, we're talking about a four-game series right now with Diamondbacks, and they're up 2-1. So. And if you look at it in that case, no, it doesn't. However, one of those games was a complete blowout. So if you're okay with winning two out of three, that's good enough for playoffs. You know, if you win every, 66% of your games,
you're going to advance. Yeah.
A lot of MVPs on this team, as you mentioned. I'm going to go back one more time to the pitching and talk about one of those MVPs we mentioned on Saturday. I think I'm a little more concerned than most about this Kershaw injury. I know that they're trying to make it seem like it's minor because it's been reoccurring, but I think that reoccurring portion is what actually concerns me. He just came back from the IL after being off it all season long. Now he's running into something that
first shoulder surgery of his career.
Right, right. And shoulders are nothing to mess with. And I think we've mentioned that before. Shoulders are like the biggest thing. It's a no-no for me. I hate shoulder injuries.
Same.
Dave Roberts mentioned in the post-game conference that he said it's been going on for a few years. And then he kind of tracked it back a little bit. He's like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But if he's already saying, okay, this has been a few years, then this means that this is an injury that they know well about. Well, Clayton Kershaw hasn't been exactly the same the last couple of years either. A lot of people were pointing to age being the issue, and that might very well be. But if we're talking about needing Clayton Kershaw to be a reliable piece of this rotation for the postseason, and he's dealing with something this late into the season, that has been reoccurring for his entire career, but something that he couldn't go two innings on in his last start. To me, that's really concerning. And I think that it's going to be a bigger story than what they're leading on right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to me is if this has been an issue for a while he's down with shoulder surgery, fix that too, right?
Right.
Like just fix it. I don't understand why if you know he was going to be out for 3 months, you don't just say, longer than that, because he got the surgery in the offseason. Go ahead and, do whatever you have to do to fix the bone spur as well. And so that's kind of the odd thing to me, right? If this hasn't bothered him for a while, fix it. He's already down, right? Just go ahead and take care of it. So that's odd. Flip side of this here, Diamondbacks. We've talked about they haven't had the sheer number of injuries on the offensive side that the Dodgers have had on the pitching side. But the injuries that they have had have all felt like they've been top contributors, right? Ketel Marte has missed 2 weeks with that sprained ankle. Christian Walker's been out 34 days with an oblique injury. Gabriel Moreno has been out 27 days now with his, they're calling it now an adductor strain and not a groin strain, but he hurt his groin. Come on. To go along with that, Lourdes Gurriel leaves the series over the weekend, getting an MRI for an injury. And the Diamondbacks sustain what they've been doing if they lose Lourdes Gurriel as well. And they're down four of their top five hitters.
They have a nice lead in the National League when it comes to wild card. And I think that's what's working out for them. But you have to be concerned a little bit. And I know we've mentioned this quite a few times on this show already about these Diamondbacks injuries, because it's, to me, it's actually really impressive how well they've played with all these injuries. They're still trying ways to figure it out. The Josh Bell pickup was great. Mm-hmm. The catching for Moreno has been great. Missing out on Kettle Marte, who has been easily the best leadoff hitter in baseball this year, is hurtful. But this Gurriel one might be the thing that's just that last hair on the Diamondbacks' back, if you will. I think it's really, that could be a really big concern, because we're still not set on this pitching, Lindsay. At least I'm not. I'm still not confident on this pitching to hold off. I don't think we're in the same boat to where you could say that this Diamondbacks offense could hold the pitching like we just mentioned with the Dodgers going over with the pitching. So if you're looking at the National League as a whole, not just the Diamondbacks in the wild card race, yeah, I'd be concerned. And I think that's the end goal for this team. They were in the World Series last year. I don't think their end goal is just to make the postseason.
Yeah. Final game of that series is today at 4:10 Eastern. Jack Flaherty, like you said, versus Eduardo Rodriguez, a guy that they need to have a really good start because, again, Merrill Kelly got blown up over the weekend. You've got other pitching injuries. You need to figure out who you have and who you can trust here. Okay. Kind of sticking into a coastal team here. The New York Yankees dropped their series to the St. Louis Cardinals and 2-1. They won the opener 6-3. St. Louis won 6-5 on Saturday and 14-7 on Sunday. And this was interesting because it broke some kind of historic futility for the Cardinals in Yankee Stadium. I believe you have more about that, right?
Yep. So the Yankees for the first time, the Cardinals defeated the Yankees for the first time at Yankee Stadium, the new stadium that has been there since 2009, the present. But because of the interleague play that's just been switching, it was really only one series in that case. So the stat sounds way more impressive than it is. However, it's still a crazy stat. The last time the St. Louis Cardinals won on the road against New York Yankees before this series, Lindsay, Bob Gibson was the pitcher. 1964 World Series, Game 5. He pitched a 10-inning complete game in that pivotal World Series game back there in 1964. So it only made sense for the person to break that record was Kyle Gibson, was the winning pitcher this weekend to break that record. So, yeah,
no relation there, folks.
Yeah, no relation. But it's just a really interesting stat. I'm shocked they go ahead and break that record. But one of the biggest things was on Sunday, those Cardinals looked pretty good. 21 hits. A lot of them coming from Jordan Walker, getting every day at bats, finally getting called up after the Tommy Pham getting placed on waivers. He goes 5-for-5 in the game, 3 RBIs. He gets his first home run of the season. You got to love that. You got to love something from a guy that's finally getting those every day at bats. It sucks that it's happening in September, but you're finally
when the team's out of it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, him sitting down in Memphis for a really long time, and it's the second year in a row that they've done that with him. He started the season up in St. Louis, sent him back to Memphis to readjust and then bring him back up, and he starts doing well again. There's that questions me on player development with the Cardinals system, and I know I'm not the only one. So we'll see how that works out for Jordan Walker and the rest of the year. Some people have noticed this, and I'm not one of them, but I think it'd be interesting to pay attention to this offseason that he may be on the move. So pay attention to that one.
It's almost like Jordan Walker's a top prospect in baseball, and they should have been playing him the whole time. Wild.
Go figure.
I don't necessarily think this is anything super urgent for the Yankees. They are half a game up in the East. Even if they don't win this, they are solidly going to be the first wild card spot. The Orioles right behind them are 4 games up on everybody else in the wild card race. So I don't think this has a lot of... I think this is just a... any given Sunday, right? Any team can beat anybody else in a 3-game series if everything breaks right for them. So I'm not too concerned about the long-term ramifications of this. Found it interesting. Found that stat just wild, right? It took a Gibson for them to win our series on the road. for the first time since the World Series. But let's flip over to Baltimore real quick. Kind of looking here, they win the series 2-1 over the Colorado Rockies, 5-3 on Friday, lose 7-5 on Saturday, take the finale 6-1 on Sunday. So half a game back, like we said, but their September call-ups, I think, could potentially be the most impactful of all 30 teams because on the pitching side, they get Zach Eflin back. And we've talked on the show ad nauseum, it felt like, about how behind Corbin Burnes, you had a ton of questions because Grayson Rodriguez is still out, right? Could Cade Povich do it? He's gotten blown up some. Eflin wasn't available. Like, you sent Rodgers back down to AAA after trading for him at the deadline. And so who was going to be your number two and your number three? And getting Eflin back, provided he can show that he's healthy and he's back to his normal form, I think is huge. And then Kobe Mayo. I don't quite think people understand maybe exactly how good Kobe Mayo is, but his power is legitimately some of the best in baseball. And this is not just a some of the best in like the minor leagues, some of the best on his team. This is some of the best in all of baseball. His 90th percentile exit velocity is 107. The MLB average is just under 103. And being in the top half of the 100s there for 90th percentile exit velo takes him just shy of the Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton tier of power. And so having a bat like that, that you can stick into third base with the injury to Ramon Urias, to me, is potentially huge down the stretch, provided he can hit when he first gets up. Because so many prospects, we've seen this, we saw this with Jackson Holliday, we've seen this with so many guys, their first time up from AAA, they really seem to struggle with the adjustment from AAA to the majors. It is, feels like harder than it has ever been to adjust to the majors, but like in the minor leagues, he's now spent almost one entire MLB season in AAA, 149 games over two seasons. He has 34 home runs with a 550 slug. So if he can translate 85% of that to the majors, this is a big power bat to add to your roster in September.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, with almost every prospect that's come up for Baltimore this year have had some sort of immediate regression. You talk about Stowers last year was the same. Mm-hmm. Kerstad had some issues. You mentioned Jackson Holliday. Almost every single one of those players had a tough time right away. So it'll be nice to see if Mayo can translate right away. And he has translated and shown that he can at all levels. This year in the minors, he had a 981 OPS, but his entire minor career, he has a 925 OPS. So it shows that he's translated at every single level. Now, obviously, the jump from AAA to major leagues is no joke. So if he can do that, yeah, I think you're right, Lindsay. I think this power bat could be huge. He plays good defense too. So, I mean, I think that he's definitely getting the call up for his offense, but you go ahead and give him, you put a bat in that lineup and probably in the bottom half of that lineup, you'd assume. You gotta like what you're getting from Kobe Mayo if he can hit the ball.
Yeah, it's potentially a really impactful addition, like you said, provided he can adjust quickly. Okay, let's get into quick pitch real quick. A lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Minor league update. One of the guys that was called up that, you know, for the September roster expansion that didn't have a lot of success his first time up, Kyle Manzardo of the Cleveland Guardians. He was a top Tampa Bay Rays prospect at first base. He was a one-for-one swap last year with Aaron Civale. Had a terrible 2023. There's a lot of personal family stuff behind that. His mother was very ill, things like that. Gets called up, hits two homers on Sunday. This Cleveland offense, I feel like, because of some of the ballpark changes they made and some approach changes some guys did, like Stephen Kwan, they really hit for a lot more power than we expected in the first half of the year before kind of falling off in the second half. Is Kyle Manzardo enough for them to keep pace in the Central?
Well, I mean, it certainly helps. There's no doubt about that, because I think we've been asking for more performance from this offense. And if Manzardo can step up, then that's absolutely what they need. Ramirez has been great. Noel has been fantastic. Like, where has he come from? I don't think we're talking about him enough. Big Christmas. I love that nickname, by the way. I think that's fantastic. But you bring Manzardo into the case, especially since they still are not getting much out of Lane Thomas. That trade, he might be the worst trade deadline of the season, pickup of the entire, of all baseball, Lindsay. So adding Manzara, I think, is huge. If he can continue this, you know, the two bombs is great on Sunday, but can he do it for the whole month of September? That's the big question.
There's not a lot of impactful games tonight. We may have to dive into on tomorrow's show. We may have to dive into some of those trade deadline acquisitions and re-rate them as to who's been great and who's been poor. If you want to hear that, if you're all, you know, let us know down in the comments down below. Yeah, this is okay. So Joensky Noel is an interesting situation because he's been on a lot of different teams. He's been moved back and forth and things like that. But no, I feel like Manzardo and Noel give them a dimension they haven't had. It's still going to come down to the pitching to me.
Oh yeah.
Their schedule is right at 16th toughest. So like it's right there in the middle, 493 remaining winning percentage. But when you look at this, four against the Twins, three against the Royals, who were just swept by the Astros over the weekend, a devastating loss. We'll get to them in just a second. I still think it really just depends on how they do in their divisional matchups. Yes, they have the Astros for three. Yes, they have the Dodgers for three. But they also get like the Sox for three, your Cardinals for three. I really just think it depends on how they do against the Twins and how they do against the Royals as to whether or not they'll hold on to the Central. But I'm curious to see. Let's go ahead and get over to those Royals, by the way. Again, swept by the Astros. The big story here, though, is they lose Vinny Pascantino. Okay. He's trying to field an offline throw at first base. It takes him up the first base line and he collides with catcher Yanny Diaz. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. He's going to miss the entire rest of the regular season and probably a good bit of the postseason. And the immediate move that they made was to trade cash to the Atlanta Braves for Yuli Gurriel. And I'll remind everybody, you can do trades after the trade deadline if it is a player in the minor leagues who has never been on a 40-man roster that season, not appeared in the majors. Yuli Gurriel spent the entire year in AAA with Atlanta, 75 games, batted .292 with an .863 OPS, but he did not play in the major leagues at all, was not on the 40-man roster, so you can make this trade. The Braves had just swapped him over to third base to try to see if he could play third base. It'd be the first time since 2019 that he played third because of the Austin Riley injury. But he comes up. He goes 1-for-3 with an RBI in the game on Sunday for the Royals. Is Yuli Gurriel enough to keep the Royals going in the Central? Or is losing Vinny P, who I believe had team lead in RBI, is that just too much too late in the season?
Yeah, not only did he have the team lead in RBIs, I think he was like fourth in the entire league. Cool. So, yeah, I think it's a huge hit losing Pascantino. And we don't know what we're going to get out of Gurriel. As you mentioned, he hasn't played a single Major League Baseball game this season. Now, he had some pretty good numbers in AAA this year, but can that translate to the major leagues? We've seen him do it before, but we haven't seen him do it at this age.
And he's 40 years old.
I'm concerned. There's no doubt about that. They did pick up some other pieces on the waiver claims. We're going to talk about that right before we leave.
We can go do it now.
I am.
Shout out to you, Tommy Pham. Like you called that. I love the choice of Tommy Pham and then Robbie Grossman from the Rangers, both of them going over to Kansas City. I've always thought Kansas City's outfielders were probably the weak spot there. MJ Melendez moving from catcher out there hasn't necessarily had the consistency offensively that you wanted.
Yeah.
But I feel like those are potentially two really good waiver claims and probably the best landing places for them. Although I think Pham is more impactful than Grossman.
Yeah, I agree. I think that those are more impactful than Gurriel. And I do think Pham is the most impactful piece out of all of those being picked up because that outfield is dealing with. And if they can find a way to get Renfroe back with Pham and then you have Grossman sitting in the depths. Yeah, I like that as well. If Gurriel works, though, this could be one of those pieces that we look back and kind of like in the Diamondback situation with Christian Walker, Josh Bell. Obviously, Josh Bell has shown he can do it at the major league level this year. But if Gurriel can kind of, you know, be remotely close to what Bell has been for Arizona, then the Royals are going to be just fine. But it's a big ask, Lindsay.
I don't necessarily think that he has to be really, really good, because Freddie Freeman behind the plate has been great, batting 293, not a ton of power, six homers, right? 94 games. But him being really good offensively and defensively behind the plate means that Salvador Perez can play a lot more first base. And so I don't necessarily know if you need Yuli Gurriel to be awesome or if you just need him to be able to give you one good game, two good games a week. Like, I think, kind of think that's where you are right now. The question for me is going to be when you move, when you give Fermin a day off and you move Perez back behind the plate, what does the first base position look like that day? How does Gurriel do in those situations? Is it a black hole of offense or can he actually hold his own? And then if you play Perez almost every single day, because that's kind of the cadence you would have. He would, when he's not catching, he'd be first base almost every single day. What does his performance do, given that he is age 34 and he does have a ton of games and a ton of wear on that body? I think he's played over 1,500 career games already. So can he hold up? And I think it's not a bad place to be. The question is just, like, can Gurriel cover enough to keep Salvador Perez healthy and keep this offense rolling? I think that's really the bigger question. But if Gurriel was awesome, that would definitely not hurt at all, because you could always stick somebody into a DH role.
Yeah, the AL Central is going to be fun to watch. I can't wait. And you know, the Royals are going to be in the forefront of that for me.
Speaking of wanting to watch the AL Central, the Chicago White Sox. they are 0-10 in their last 10 games.
Wanting to watch?
Wanting to watch. They're on a 10 game, like they've lost the last 10 games. But here's the thing. They have 107 losses now. It is the worst season for the, I believe, the Chicago White Sox in team history. Do they set the major league record for futility? Because the 1962 Mets lost 120 games. And the difference here is the 62 Mets were an expansion team. The Chicago White Sox are 31-107. So they've played, you know, they have to win. It's been a .225 winning percentage. They have to win at a better clip to not lose 120 games this year. Do they have a late season surge and find a way to not set the record for worst team in history?
So they have 138 games in. So that means they still have, what is that?
24
games. So that means that they can't lose 14 games out of that 24. So you're telling me they have to go 10-14 the rest of the season? No, they're going to break the record. I don't think
for the record, they've never had a month with that many wins.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to make that. I don't think we're going to see that happen. I think they might break the record and they might shatter it.
They might lose 130 games.
Yeah, it might happen.
Might lose 130 games.
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to break the record, and I think I'll meet you in the middle there. I think we're going to get 125 losses out of the White Sox.
Nice. Okay, so that is absolutely wild. Real quick before we go, shout out to Dylan Cease, has his 200th strikeout over the weekend. And frustrating thing was, I don't think that they knew it was his 200th strikeout, and they threw the ball into the stands. The team did confirm Manny Machado was able to get the ball back from the fan who caught it. He was on the field. He got the ball back. The fan threw it back to him. Somebody else gave him, I believe it was a ball that they signed real quick and they threw back to that fan. So he did get the ball back, but shout out to Dylan Cease. He leads the majors in strikeouts with 201. It is the fourth consecutive season he has broken 200 strikeouts. Is this something where, I mean, he has one more year of arbitration before free agency. As of right now, does he look like he might be the best pitcher to hit free agency in 2026?
Yes. Yeah, as of right now, unless anything changes, yes, I agree. And I'm going to throw one more shout out at you, too, because Derek Skubal also got his 200th career strikeout over the weekend. His ball did not go in the stands, so that's pretty good. But no, when it comes to Dylan Cease, yeah, I think you have to think that he's going to be the best pitcher in 2026. I can't think of anybody else right now, but yeah, man, could you imagine that free agency market, what it's going to be? I already can't wait till what we're going to see in free agency this month or this upcoming year with Juan Soto and all the rest of the players that are going to opt out from all those crazy Boris deals. Mm-hmm. So 2026 is going to be absolutely wild as well.
This has been First Pitch for Monday, September 2nd. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. It means a ton. Helps folks find the show. If you're on YouTube, like the video. Leave a comment down below. We'll see you tomorrow. This has been First Pitch.